The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Yunkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles first from the Harvard Heart Letter and then from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Both are the April 2021 issues. The first article comes from the Harvard Heart Letter and is entitled, Why You Should Consider Hiring a Personal Trainer. A good one can provide motivation and customized advice on a safe, effective, and well-rounded exercise routine. Exercise is one of the pillars of heart disease prevention, but at some point you may need to help shoring up your workout habits. Maybe you exercise only in fits and starts without sticking to a regular routine. Or perhaps you're in a rut doing the same old 30-minute trudge on the treadmill every day. Another possibility is that you have a health condition like high blood pressure or arthritis or another physical problem, an old knee or back injury, for example, that makes you hesitant to exercise. For all these reasons and more, hiring a personal trainer can be a sound investment. Probably the most important role of a personal trainer is to teach proper form during exercise, says Vijay Dharyani, a physical therapist and certified personal trainer with Harvard-affiliated Spalding Outpatient Center. Good form means not only correct posture and body mechanics, but also when and how to breathe, he adds. Many people who exercise in gyms don't get any formal instruction about how to use the machines, says Dharyani. Movement of any type is great, but if you let a professional show you the right technique for different exercises, you'll get a more balanced workout that's at the right level for your ability. Some people take a brisk walk every day, but avoid doing any strength-building activities. Other people have completely the opposite tendency. But a balanced workout includes not just cardio and strength work, but also exercises to improve your balance and flexibility, as well as moves that boost your stamina. A varied routine can help prevent overuse injuries, stave off boredom, and improve your ability to do other activities, from carrying groceries to swinging a tennis racket or a golf club. In addition to creating your individualized routine, a personal trainer can boost motivation and confidence. People don't always like to push beyond their comfort zone. I try to empower them to try new exercises, but always at an appropriate level, says Dharyani. Breathing lessons. Paying attention to your breathing can help, especially during heart-pumping aerobic activity. A trainer can help ensure that you're pacing yourself for the correct intensity level. Not too easy, but not too hard. Your blood pressure can rise if you hold your breath as you do strength exercises. So it's important to exhale as you lift, push or pull, inhale as you release. You can tell if you're using too much weight if you get stuck in the middle or find yourself grunting with effort. To stay in the safe zone, reduce the amount of weight you're lifting. If you have arthritis or a muscle or joint injury, a good trainer can suggest modifications or alternative exercises that won't exacerbate the issue. For example, there are many different abdominal exercises that don't put any strain on the lower back, and you don't necessarily need to get down on the floor to stretch the muscles in your legs and buttocks. Some gyms and fitness centers have personal trainers on staff or hire them as contractors. But many will come to your house and can devise an at-home workout plan for you, even if you don't own any machines or special equipment. The article goes on to describe choosing a personal trainer, what to look for. It says, first, make sure your trainer is accredited by one or more of these organizations, either the American Council on Exercise, the American College of Sports Medicine, the International Sports Science Association, or the National Academy of Sports Medicine. Ask about the person's training, experience working with clients your age, and approach to designing client programs. Ask for references, especially from clients like you. Sign up for a few sessions at first to gauge how well you and the trainer work together before you commit to something longer. Prices vary widely depending on where you live, as well as your gym affiliation. The cost ranges anywhere from $60 to $120 per hour. You might be able to save a little money by hiring a trainer to do small group sessions with you and one or several of your friends who have similar fitness levels and goals. The next article is entitled Genetic Testing to Tailor Heart Drug Prescriptions. Your genes affect how your body responds to many drugs, but pharmacogenomic testing still isn't ready for routine use. And this is also in the Harvard Heart Letter of April 2021. Most genetic tests focus on your odds of developing certain diseases or health conditions, but some, known as pharmacogenomic tests, can reveal how your body may respond and react to different medications. To date, researchers have identified 400 genetic variations known to affect the metabolism of numerous drugs, including some that help lower cholesterol or prevent blood clots. In theory, knowing how people metabolize specific drugs could help doctors choose the safest, most effective treatment for their patients. But in practice, it's not that straightforward, says Jason Vassy, assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and a primary care physician at the VA Boston Healthcare System. Simply knowing about a drug gene association isn't enough to show whether that information will improve a person's health, he says. So far, there's no clear evidence of a benefit for the average person who has or is at risk for heart disease. That's also the case for pharmacogenomic tests for psychiatric drugs, which have been marketed directly to consumers in recent years. Although some studies have suggested possible benefits, the FDA says these tests have no proven value. The problem? Many other factors, including age, sex, when and what you last ate, and other drugs you take, can affect drug levels in your body. New information from old results. More than 1 million people have already taken a psychiatric pharmacogenomic test and may therefore know the makeup of some of their genotype, including their CYP2C19 gene, which regulates an enzyme that affects the breakdown of certain antidepressants, as well as some other drugs, including anti-clotting agent Plavix or clopidogrel. And more than 10 million people have ordered testing from the direct-to-consumer genetic testing company 23andMe. Some of its packages include pharmacogenomic information about CYP2C19 and another gene of interest, SLCO1B1. If you have pharmacogenomic information from one of these tests, it's worth sharing with your primary care physician and cardiologist, says Dr. Vassy. For example, if you've had a heart attack, you might need a stent, a tiny mesh tube to prop open a blocked heart artery. Normally, your doctor would then prescribe clopidogrel to discourage clots. But if you know you're a poor responder, he might consider prescribing an alternative drug. Similarly, pharmacogenomic results for the SLCO1B1 gene can give some information about the risk of muscle side effects from one common statin, simvastatin or Zocor, and possibly atorvastatin or Lipitor, but it probably doesn't apply to other statins. Further research is needed before pharmacogenomic tests are used in routine visits for heart-related conditions. A side article gives some details about this. It's entitled, Pharmacogenomics of Common Heart Drugs. The Clinical Pharmacogenetic Implementation Consortium publishes guidelines to help doctors understand how available genetic test results might be used to optimize drug therapy. Here is a summary of information on two common heart drugs. Zocor, or simvastatin, is prescribed to reduce high cholesterol. Variants in a gene called SLCO1B1 are linked to a rare form of muscle pain or myopathy caused by statins. Most people have two normal versions of the gene and are unlikely to be at risk. One-third of people have one or two copies of the risky variant. That doesn't mean they will definitely develop myopathy, just that they're at higher risk. For example, even if you're among the estimated 2% of the population who has two copies of the risky variant, your odds of developing statin-induced myopathy are only about 17 in 1,000. But as a precaution, people with copies of the risky variants should take simvastatin only at doses up to 40 milligrams a day, or else they should take an alternative statin. The SLCO1B1 Myopathy Association may also apply to atorvastatin or Lipitor, but that remains unclear at this time. Clopidogrel or Plavix is prescribed to prevent blood clots following a heart attack or stent implantation. Variants of a gene called CYP2C19 affect how well a person converts clopidogrel to its active form in the body. Most people are ultra-rapid metabolizers and get the desired effectiveness, but 30% of people are intermediate or poor metabolizers, meaning the drug is less effective, potentially leaving them at higher risk for dangerous clots. People with such variants might benefit from an alternative anti-clotting drug like Prasugrel, or Effient, or Ticagrelor, or Brilinta. This Harvard Heart Letter of April 2021 ends with, Research We're Watching. The first short article is, Why Nuts May Be Good for Your Health. Eating nuts even a couple of times a week is linked to a lower risk of dying from heart disease. The study included 39,000 women who filled out dietary questionnaires at the start of the study and again about 10 years later. During the follow-up, which lasted an average of 19 years, nearly 1,000 of the women died of cardiovascular disease. To crack the potential effects of nuts, researchers accounted for body mass index, physical activity, smoking habits, and other factors that influence heart disease risk. Women who ate a serving of nuts, about a quarter cup, at least twice a week, had a 27% lower risk of death from cardiovascular disease compared with women who didn't eat nuts. Improved cholesterol and blood sugar levels seen among the nut eaters may account for part of this benefit, according to the researchers who published in the February 2021 Journal of Clinical Lipidology. The next short article is Blood Pressure Checks, Both Sides Now? A difference in the blood pressure reading from the left and right arm may herald a higher risk of heart disease. A report published in the February 2021 issue of Hypertension includes data from more than 57,000 adults in general health clinics who had their blood pressure measured in both arms. Researchers tracked the participants' cardiovascular health for more than a decade. They found that when people have at least a 5-point difference in blood pressure between the left and the right arm, their risk of heart attack, stroke, or premature death rises. And the greater the difference, the more this risk goes up. The discrepancy between the two arms may be an early sign of hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis, the root cause of most heart disease. The findings support the practice of checking blood pressure in both arms, which is recommended but rarely done. If you've never had both arms checked sequentially, ask your doctor at your next visit. If the reading from one arm is higher, that side should be the one upon which to base any treatment and to check your blood pressure in the future. Finally, it says, smartphone apps and trackers may help boost physical activity. Surveys show that about 1 in 5 Americans use a smartphone app or tracker for monitoring exercise. Evidence of the benefits of these tools is mixed, but a new review suggests they may encourage people to move a bit more. Researchers pooled findings from 28 studies involving a total of nearly 7,500 people who took part in studies using a smartphone app or activity tracker. They found that these tools have a small to moderate effect in boosting physical activity, motivating people to take an average of 1,850 additional steps per day. Unlike pedometers and other earlier step and motion tracking devices, modern-day smartphones, smartwatches, and fitness bands record activity with greater ease and accuracy. Newer apps also offer more personalized features and other ways to encourage people, like text messaging. In fact, interventions that relied on these enhanced features were more effective in boosting activity, according to the review, which was published in December 21, 2020, by the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Now we're going to turn to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, also from April 2021. And the first article is entitled Dizziness and Vertigo. It often goes away, but it can linger. To many people, the idea of getting out of a chair and walking across the room sounds simple. But for people with chronic ongoing dizziness or vertigo, this can be a monumental task. Vertigo refers to the sense that you or your surroundings are suddenly spinning, tilting, or moving. Dizziness is a different type of sensation, like feeling faint, woozy, or unsteady. Dizziness may also refer to feeling lightheaded or heavy-headed. Dizziness and vertigo sometimes go away on their own, but in some cases, such as with severe, sudden, prolonged, or recurring symptoms, it's a good idea to seek medical help for a diagnosis and to explore treatment options. Why you feel dizzy. Your sense of balance relies on combined input from your eyes, which help determine spatial orientation and body movement. Sensory nerves, which send messages to your brain about body movements and positions. And inner ear, including the semicircular canals, utricle, and saccule, collectively known as the vestibular labyrinth, which senses gravity and rotation and back and forth motion. Problems in the inner ear and conflicting messages between these systems can cause you to lose your sense of balance, feel dizzy, or experience vertigo. Conditions that can lead to dizziness and vertigo include benign paroxysmal positional vertigo, or BPPV. This condition can cause a sudden, brief, and often rather severe sense that you're spinning or moving. The inner ear senses gravity as well as rotational and back and forth motion. Tiny particles called otoconia in your utricle and saccule shift as you move, pulling the gel membrane and stimulating sensory hair cells to send signals about your movement. These spells are triggered by a change in head position, such as from turning over in bed or sitting up. BPPV is thought to occur when tiny particles, the otoconia in the utricle, float into part of your inner ear where they don't belong and send confusing messages about your movement. BPPV is a frequent cause of vertigo and can be treated with techniques like canalith repositioning procedure. Next is vestibular neuritis. It's thought that this constant vertigo with sudden onset is due to inflammation, probably a virus, of the nerve conveying information from the ear to the brain that helps you to maintain your balance. In addition to intense vertigo, signs and symptoms can include nausea and vomiting, which improve gradually without treatment, though vestibular therapy can help speed recovery. Medications like anti-nausea drugs may be helpful in the first few days when symptoms are at their worst. A stroke can sometimes mimic the symptoms of vestibular neuritis. Seek immediate medical attention if you think you may be experiencing a stroke, particularly if you're also experiencing signs and symptoms like double vision, slurred speech, arm or leg weakness or numbness, or lack of coordination. Next is vestibular migraine. People who experience migraines may have episodes of vertigo or dizziness even when they're not having a severe headache. Such episodes usually last for hours and may be associated with light and noise sensitivity. Vestibular migraine is the most common cause of recurrent, non-positional attacks of vertigo. Anxiety disorders. Certain anxiety disorders, like panic attacks, may cause lightheadedness or dizziness. Head trauma. Head trauma, like a concussion, can lead to acute or post-concussive dizziness. And Meniere's disease. The cause of this disease is unclear, but it can lead to episodes of vertigo that can last for hours. You may also experience episodes of hearing loss. ringing in the ear, tinnitus, and the feeling of a plugged ear. While there is no cure, medication may help to treat vertigo attacks and nausea, and limiting salt intake is thought to help. There are many other treatment strategies, including surgery in certain cases. Other possible causes of dizziness and vertigo include side effects from certain medications, a drop in blood pressure, a heart attack, or a condition like a heart arrhythmia. The article goes on to describe the canalith repositioning procedure. To help relieve benign positional vertigo, your doctor may use a series of maneuvers and move canalith particles from the posterior semicircular canal into the utricle. And the article describes these repositioning procedures, which include sitting on the end of a bed and turning your head 45 degrees to the left, placing a pillow behind you so that on lying back, it will be under your shoulders. Lie back quickly with your shoulders on the pillow and your head down. Wait until the symptoms stop, then add 30 seconds. Turn your head 90 degrees to the right without raising your head and wait until the symptoms stop. Turn your body and head 90 degrees to the right and once again, wait until symptoms stop. Then sit up on the right side of the bed and bring your head back to the center with your chin slightly tucked. Wait until the symptoms stop, then add 30 seconds. And again, the purpose of this procedure is to move catalyth particles from the posterior semicircular canal of the inner ear into the utricle. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I enjoyed it. I hope you did too.